This is Jasa Sagonige,
a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalee, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody. This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from Booger County, the mysterious Ozarks and Mid-America. And our honored guest this week is Daryl White Wolf. Daryl's a Cherokee, and he's of the age to be an elder, and we're talking to him in Adelaide, Australia. He's been down under for about 4 or 5 years. And hello, Daryl. Welcome to the show.
Oh, CO Blue Otter.
Oh, CO. Well, we...
How you doing?
Doing pretty well. I first heard of you last, I guess it was last May, you... You issued a challenge to Native elders worldwide, and it was picked up and reposted everywhere. That was just
yes, it was
amazing, and a lot's happened since then. There was a lot going on at that time, and that was back during the Aussie bloke scare, and which I don't think that whole thing is over with. There's too many strange things going on down under, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk with you. And so tell the folks a little bit about yourself and just kind of meander around and let them know what you're thinking about the way things are going in the world.
Okay, well, I'm just me. I'm not really no different than anybody else. I've always known I was Cherokee through my family, my grandfather, way back when I was 6 years old. A lot of things started happening with me back then. I can remember most of it like it happened yesterday. Grandfather set me down. My grandfather Thomas set me down. We was out in Fort Worth, Texas at the time, and I was sitting on a swing set. We were listening to wolves howling in the distance. And you know, back then there were wolves out there, and not much civilization, if I remember right. He told me. Something always stuck with me, a few things actually. He said, number one, he says, you are Cherokee, he says, and you're from the clan of the wolf. And he says, and there's something else I want you to remember as you go through life, and this has always stuck with me. He says, remember that you don't own anything, not even the shirt on your back. And I tell people that today, you know, because there's a lot of truth in that. We don't own anything. If we put everything that we think we own on the ground, it's going to go back to the earth where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
But most of my family, and it was a big family, cousins. I got cousins all over the United States. But most of them come from around Cooper County, Kentucky, along the Owensboro and the Ohio River there. And we used to go down there and hunt fish and trap back when I was a kid. And I remember some of these old shacks we used to go to, and there were fish. There weren't clothes hanging on the line. There were fish hanging on the line. animal skins, you know, raccoons and possums and things like that stretched out on these little ironing board-looking things. And it was a different way of life down there. People ate really good. I mean, when we had people over for dinner, there was just tons and tons of food. But, you know, they didn't wear, you know, feathers and leather and fur and things like that. Everybody wore rags, pretty much. And, you know, growing up, it wasn't really a good thing to be Indian or part Indian or anything to do with Indians where I grew up at. So we were shunned and told to keep it quiet. And I got beat up a few times just for having high cheekbones. I learned to stand up for myself, and I went through life with most kids and young adults, and I went into the military after high school. Well, I went to high school, the same high school with David Letterman.
Hmm.
I think he was 4 years ahead of me, but we both went to Broad Ripple High School on the north side of Indianapolis. And after I got out of high school, I think I finished my last year in Galena Park, Houston, Texas. And then I went in the military, and I joined the Marines, and went through boot camp and basic training. And we were actually the first in boot camp. We had the first full honor series battalion in the history of the Marine Corps. I mean, we went through some rigorous training. You know, back in, those were the old Corps days when they could do just about anything they wanted to you. Nowadays, they have to be a little bit more careful, but. And then went through infantry battalion training.
That's back when Lee Ermey was a was a DI, huh?
Yeah, yeah, that was back. That was back not long after Smedley Butler come through to inspect the base there in North Carolina. And he said, you know, he said, I've seen all this. He said, I want to see the real Marines take me to the brig. But yeah, it the old Corps. I bet people could tell some stories about that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I went into communications. That was my MOS, communications, 2511. Field wireman, so I was a pole climber. They taught us how to climb a telephone pole and rescue a cat off the top of it. Now, that's a trick. That is a trick if you don't know what you're doing.
Hmm.
Then we had to do combat jumps off the poles and stuff like that. And I got into radio, 2533, I believe it was, the MOS. Radio communications, field communications. And, of course, the first thing after infantry training that they did was they divided us up into two groups, and one group went to Anchorage, Alaska. My group went to Da Nang.
Mm.
And the plane that went to Anchorage, Alaska crashed and killed everybody on board.
Oh, my.
So I was quite blessed with going to Vietnam, actually. I consider it a blessing that I didn't get on that plane. But, you know, I lost a lot of friends in that. And I lost, of course, I lost a lot of friends in Vietnam, too, as a lot of guys did. But I didn't see a whole lot of action. I was most of the time in the rear with the gear. But there were some times when they sent us out on what they call lure patrols or long-range reconnaissance, ambush patrols and things like that. We'd spend about 6 days out in the jungle. But anyway, I don't want to get into all that stuff. But, you know, after that, I got out of the service, and I went up to Canada, and I started working with horses up there because I've always had an affection for horses, and worked with hunters and jumpers up there. But they were not your ordinary hunters and jumpers. These were Clydesdales and thoroughbred crossbreed, huge horse. We're talking 18, 20 hand tall. Did that for a few months up there for some people, and that was in London, Ontario. Went down to Florida and worked with the Florida horse down there, hunters and jumpers, and also thoroughbreds. And I raised horses from the foaling stall to the starting gate. And then after that, I moved out to Arizona because that's where my uncle and my aunt lived. They lived out in the Groom Creek Pines up in Prescott. And I spent 12 years living on Apache land out there, down in a little town called Elfrida. I started the first ambulance service in Elfrida. Went back to college, went back to school, went to Cochise College, and took emergency medical training to become an EMT. I was already a volunteer firefighter, but I went on and took more classes than that, became a firefighter one, rescue. I was well-versed in bulk flammable liquids and explosive vapors, bushfires, wildland fires, structural fires, and high extrication. So I got a lot of training, and then I even went on to become an advanced EMT, which was advanced life support, intubation, defibrillation, IVs, and things like that. And then I could tell you, you know, so many stories about Arizona.
All bad.
Some of them are pretty strange, but. Yeah, so I've been around. You know, I spent some time in Japan and Okinawa, and I'm finally here in Australia, and I like it here.
What set you down that way?
What brought me down here? Well, my wife dragged me down here by the hair. No, I met her at a powwow. I met her at a powwow in Michigan, up in Grand Rapids. I was dancing up there, and I run into her, and things just kind of click. You know how they do. And I went from there, and I've always wanted to come to Australia. I had a chance when I was in Vietnam to come here for R&R, but it never panned out. It was either Australia or Taipei, and I wanted to come to Australia. I've always wanted to see this country, and, well, here I am. And I'm a permanent resident here now, so I can actually go back and forth anytime I want.
Well, that's really cool.
You can talk. I don't have to take up the whole conversation here.
Yeah, well, we're done with that part, you know. But I guess last May there was a quite a bit of excitement, a lot of strange reports about things happening at the South Pole, reports coming out of South Australia about a military base that I guess it had been closed, but it had been reopened, and that the locals said that there was something called Project Wormwood going on down there. Just a lot of high strangeness, a lot of really strange news coming out of
it.
It's just about that time, that's when you issued your challenge, and so I want you to tell, you know, the folks a little bit about, you know, what that was all about, and this is last May, you know, April, May.
Yeah, that was May. It was right out. It was 4 days after the white buffalo calf was born up in Flagstaff.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea at the time that it happened, and somebody wrote me a letter saying, "Did you know that there was a white buffalo calf that was just born up there?" And I had no idea that that happened, but I knew that things were getting strange. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff going on here, and we had a really active year of UFO sightings down here at the time.
You have a lot of meteors also?
Yeah, there was a lot of meteors, and some of them, well, I was sitting here one night, and there was a loud bang. I mean, and the dogs in the neighborhood went off, and there was a big flash. Turned out that, you know, it was a meteor, a rather large one, that came into the atmosphere and blew up, as they do.
That was...
I never really worried about anything big, you know, coming in and hitting us. I didn't quite think that was going to happen.
Well, that was the rumor that you know, something was going to blindside us coming from the south of the planet, and that there were a lot of the rumor that was circulating was that just about every astronomer in the world had rotated down there, you know, in the first 6 months of last year. And just a lot of really strange goings on, a prediction of a possible asteroid strike or a close flyby. And oddly enough, there were some huge, I guess over around Indonesia, there was a couple of really large meteors that literally turned the night sky to almost daylight or something like that. There was some big stuff coming in. So really, it really made people wonder. And then the whole situation with Aussie bloke, you know, who it turned out to be. Well, I guess the jury's still out on exactly what that was all about. But the person, apparently a person who was impersonating a former physicist down there, a physicist who had years before done some research on possible near-Earth objects or possible asteroid strike, and this Dr. Grant Gertrell was on vacation, and during the first couple of weeks of May, someone got on the internet and started posting, and I guess on May 15th they said, well, my name is Dr. you know, Gertrell, and so I picked up that bit of information and started looking around, and then I discovered there was a Dr. Grant Gertrell who had testified in front of the parliament of his province there in Australia on the subject of caving, and so that really got me interested, and then I you know, further search, you know, I found out that he had retired and bought a blueberry farm, and so I guess, you know, I contacted you. We actually got the guy's phone number, and I guess you found somebody that went to try to find where he was, and nobody was around and hadn't been around for a couple of weeks, which further gets kind of fueled the and then
you wonder.
Oh yeah, all of it just added up to, hey, what in the world is going on, and the fact that he might be in a cave somewhere, you know. Apparently he had found some some prehistoric dinosaur bones or something, but it was all really highly strange, and I guess the whole scare had gotten started a year ago, January, with something called the Snowball Intercept, which was a ham radio operator had intercepted a countdown, a reference to, you know, T-minus 100 and some odd days and counting until impact. So, you know, there was a lot of people that were really concerned last year. A lot of people that still are. But just because the asteroid thing didn't happen, there were a lot of large things that did enter the atmosphere down there, and a lot of strange things that went on. And you and I had some interesting conversations. And I guess the whole thing ended up with Dr. Gatrell was really nonplussed. I think there's a copy of... I've still got the copy of the newspaper article that was written about the whole incident. but anyway,
front page here.
Yeah, it was a really interesting period of time. I don't scare real easy, but I was pretty concerned. I was concerned enough at that point in time to call a couple people that I knew 25 and 30 years ago that I hadn't spoken to give them a heads up. And I just told them, hey, I don't know what's going to happen. There's just a lot of strange things going on. And, we were friends. Yeah, we haven't talked in 25 or 30 years. I said, but, you know, hey, it might be worth putting in a little bit extra food and water and...
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
And, of course, it's always prudent. But so in that 11 or 12 months since then, what observations do you have about other things that have gone on?
Well, we're not out of the woods yet, I can tell you that.
Uh-huh.
There were a lot of strange things going on, and even before Gartrell's letter came out, there were meteor impacts happening all over the world. In India, there was a village that got hit, several houses burnt down. There was one in went through a roof in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember some of those, but those reports were finally starting to come out, and I don't know. You know, since we've had this modern technology and the wonder of the Internet and everything, and you kind of have to sift through the piles that, in the Internet to get the truths because there's so much garbage mixed in there with it. You just have to use your own discernment. But, yes, things were really heating up around here at that time. There was 1,000 astronomers showing up down on the Antarctic region down there. You just don't go there with 1,000 astronomers to look at stars. There must be a reason. All the battleships in the world seem to be going out into the oceans.
Yeah.
I would say, well, they're not safe in the ports. And, a person couldn't help but wonder what was going on.
Well, you know, the other thing I found out after that, I spoke with the fellow that has the commercial at largest supply of potassium iodide in the United States, and he supplies, you know, most of what FEMA has. And he said the previous December that FEMA came to him and wanted everything he had, and which is, oh, I don't know, 60,000 doses. And potassium iodide is what you take in case there's a nuclear attack. And
I've got mine right here.
Mm-hmm, so that, you know, it blocks your thyroid. It puts enough iodide in your thyroid so it doesn't become poisoned from radioactive iodine isotopes. And
yep.
So there was a lot of scary stuff going on back then. The other strange thing was that that was reported in the Russian papers and other places was that there was some kind of a whirlwind or vortex or something that they sent weather balloons up into, and when they would send the chronometers would come back with some kind of missing time, you know, and it was just, you know, you really don't know what, I mean, you can observe who's coming and going and nobody's talking, and everybody kind of looks scared, you know. And but anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt. Yeah, go ahead and look at what you were saying.
Okay. Well, when this letter came about, you know, I really don't know what happened. I talked to Spirit. Spirit talks to me, and I normally just am a forward observer. I stay out of things for the most part. I've seen a lot in my life, and I just something seemed to prop me up here and say, "Do this. You got to do this." And that it was time to light a fire under people, if you will. And I used the word challenge, not out of disrespect, but I knew that it would draw a response, and it did. It did. I thought, boy, I'll tell you what, I'm going to get my head chopped off. I'm really out on a limb here, but this is what I'm told to do, and I have to do it. But I started receiving emails and letters left and right. In 3 weeks' time, I received over 300 emails alone.
I was surprised. I figured you were going to get laughed at, but the vast majority of what you got was very positive and very supportive.
Absolutely. I think there was only three letters out of 350 that were negative responses, and one of them was from a witch, actually. And it was a threat from a witch that she threatened to call up the Thunder Beings and the Jaguars. And, I wrote back and sent her blessings, and I said, well, bring him on, because, you know, when the Jaguar comes to look into my heart and through my eyes, he's going to see my intentions. It had a lot to do as well with teaching non-Native people about Native ways and things like that. And so I think there was one person that wrote back and said something about me just wanting information on ceremonies. Well, there was nothing in the letter about me wanting information on ceremonies. I have my own ceremonies. Everybody's got their own. I really don't. It's not an issue. It's not an issue. And I understand that a lot of ceremonies have to be protected, because I know firsthand that if they get in the wrong hands, people use them the wrong way, that it can be devastating. And it'll go out like a ripple in a pond. So no, I don't. I never was interested in any ceremonies. What I was interested in was getting people come forward with the information that they had that would help people to prepare in the event that there was a big event coming our way.
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt that this was a precursor to, and like I said, we're not out of the woods yet. I wouldn't go back to sleep just yet.
Mm-hmm.
It was a precursor. So everybody knows that the Native people of the world, not just the American Indians, but the Native people of the world, the Aboriginals, the Tibetans, the Kahunas, all of them, they have the knowledge. They know what's going on. They've been in contact with the star beings. They've seen the future. They know the pathways. And my message was to get the elders to get together, to get their heads together, put all their differences aside, and make a decision on whether or not to put this information out to the public. And I still feel that this is necessary, because I see what I see going on here is a lot of little circles around the world, and these little circles are like drumming circles and healing circles and prayer circles, and these are all wonderful things. But I don't see them connected with the big circle. And I feel that the Spirit is trying to tell me this message, which is gather your circles. Those three words, gather your circle. That really, and I say, why me? What are you telling me this for? But then I realize that I'm not the only one that's hearing this message. So it doesn't mean getting all of the elders and chiefs and everybody to gather in one place. It means they can stay where they're at in the country they're at, but every nation of every continent in the world, the old wise ones, the Tibetans, you know, ever since I was a kid and reading the Bible and everything and hearing the Bible stories, one of the most fascinating stories to me was how Joshua took down the walls of Jericho. He did it with trumpets, vibration. And I, in fact, I named my son Joshua. It's for that simple reason. But and another thing that I learned was that the Tibetans could levitate stones, large stones that were about 3 foot by 3 foot by 3 foot square. They could levitate these stones actually in the air by using vibration from trumpets and drums and chanting. And I'm thinking, well, you know, Jesus walked on water. Maybe he didn't walk on water, but he vibrated high enough that he could levitate and float over the top of water. And in India, there's stories of some of the old wise brown Indian men that could sit on the floor and actually raise their bodies off the floor.
Jesus said, you know, these things you see me do and even greater you'll do, and a few people are doing them.
Yeah, we can do that too, if we can remember how. So, can you imagine the power of all of the elders, all of the chiefs, all of the medicine men and women, and the dancers? I mean, I've gone to a powwow and spent 3 days at a powwow, and after everything's all packed up and left, I've gone back there 2 or 3 days later, and I can still feel it and hear it just like it's still there. So all this energy together, in a good way, in a positive way, can turn all this fear that people have been conditioned with right back to where it came from. And I feel deep inside of me that we can, you know, we've got two pathways here. We come to about one step from the fork in the road now, and we can see down both pathways. And one of them I see, I feel like I'm in a group of lemmings, and I'm one of the lemmings, and I'm being pushed toward this cliff, and I can see the cliff ahead. On the other path, I see a path of peace and reconstruction and changing of our ways and taking back the earth and actually setting her free again. You know, these are the two choices that we have, and I feel that if we don't come together as one, in one big circle, then we fail. If we fail, we fall.
Yeah,
fall off that cliff. So basically, that's my message. You know, some people disagree and some people agree, but sooner or later we're gonna see the end result.
How are Native people viewed? Are things improving? You know, down in Australia for the Aboriginal people. I know there was a lot of activity with the tent embassy last year, and what's been going on in the last year? What have you heard?
There's been no improvements down here, none whatsoever, and I'm sorry to say that, because I was really disappointed the other day when I saw some of the elders come on television, and they actually, I couldn't believe they said this, they want to arrest the queen. They want to arrest the queen for genocide. They want to boycott the Commonwealth Games, or what they call the Stolen Wealth Games. And, you know, the thing of it is this has never worked before. Protesting in the streets, carrying signs, being angry, the government and everything, that has never worked before. Never, ever has it ever made a difference. And, you know, this thing, love is a good thing, and love is a very powerful energy. But, you know, the hippies tried that back in the 60s and the 70s, and that didn't work either.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to bubble over with love, it, to me, is a little bit unrealistic. It's good to love people, and you can... I don't really think it's possible to love everybody all the time. You need to respect your neighbor, but it's been pretty much proven you can't really love your neighbor all the time. But you can respect them. You respect their ways of being things.
Well, the way laws are set up, you know, basically the whole Western world, including Australia, is set up on old Roman law, and it's up to you to prove what your rights are. And there's activism, and then there's, you can cross that line into violence and get a struggle mentality. But yeah, you got to get out and. You have to get out into public and let people know, you know, where things went wrong and sway public opinion and educate public and
yeah,
what you got to do.
Yeah, you do have to get out there, but you got to be careful of your choice of words because everything has dual meaning. So. And even here in Australia, you have to be very careful what you say. Because people can take it one way or the other.
Yeah, yeah.
If I say dark brothers here, well, I'm speaking of dark brothers doing their dirty deeds. I'm speaking of the ones that are hurting us, you know, are taking our rights away, taking our freedoms away, and things. And they may think I'm talking about dark brothers, meaning Aboriginal brothers.
Mm.
So you got to be careful. You got to be careful. But I have. I've spoken with some of the elders down here, Uncle Thomas, down here in down here along the Coorong. Been out there on Aboriginal land, and these are wonderful people, and they all have the same views on the Earth Mother that we do. There's so much of a connection here that it's unbelievable.
Well, I guess there was some information that came out of South America last year that that scientists are really starting to wonder if there weren't migrations from Australia into South America. I can't remember how they came to that conclusion, but yeah, there's a lot of old things that were assumed. There's a lot of bubbles that are being burst and preconceived notions that are being disabused, and a lot of interesting things going on. A lot of
being changed all the time.
Yeah, things are being changed, and but politically, down there, folks are things are not getting better, and so Aboriginal people are starting to get angry, huh?
Well, they've just been taken off the flora and fauna list. Wouldn't you be angry? I mean, they were considered animals here.
Yeah.
So, and they were on the list of flora and fauna. That's not good. That's not a good thing. They're human beings just like we are, and I see no difference other than they're a little bit darker skinned than most of us. They have different ways than most of us. And in a lot of ways, they're so connected with the Native American ways, it's unbelievable. They call Father Sky, and Mother Earth, they honor the directions and all that. They have their sacred fires, and there's a story the scientists came up with that said that the Aboriginals and the American Indians actually lived on the same continent at one time before the great cataclysms.
Gondwana land,
Yeah, which would explain probably why they still find arrowheads and spearheads here on occasion, you know, flint rock. I don't know. But and then there's also a theory that the original Aboriginals came from Southeast Asia over another type of land bridge here.
Well, I think the Bible indicates that originally all the land masses were one, and then it was broken up. And of course, the continental drift theory would support that. And so, why should we be surprised? But I just get the feeling that the Aboriginal people in Australia somehow are really elder. If you know what I mean, elder.
Oh yes. I'll tell you what, you talk about powerful elders here. These elders, some of these elders and medicine men here have crystals implanted or embedded in their chest. And if they point the bone at you, it don't matter what end of the world you're on. If they point the bone at you and want to curse you, you better look out. No place to hide. And they already pointed the bone at John Howard, who's the prime minister here, because he refuses to recognize them and acknowledge them and apologize. You know, apology here is a big thing. That's all it takes, really, to get the ball rolling. It's to say, hey, you know, we're sorry. We were stupid. We need to change our ways. Thinking.
Well, you know, a couple of years ago, I thought that whole process was underway. And what, they get a new administration in the government in down there? Or,
the administration that's in here now, I don't know if I should talk about it, but it's not good. It's following all of the political maneuvers behind closed doors that's going on in America. If America sneezes, Australia catches cold.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
Yeah, well, you know, things ebb and tide here, you know, when different administrations are in. They kind of felt like, you know, George Bush, Indians here in the United States really kind of have the opinion that Democrats help them more. I don't know if they do or not. I think it really just depends on. I mean, look at what Kennedy did. You know, with the flooding of the Allegheny River, the dam project, and all those things. It's really kind of a mixed bag. Nixon did some really good things, I understand, but I think, you know, most American Indians really line up with the liberal and the Democrat, and as do blacks, but blacks, for some reason, have been conditioned to go Democrat, but they forget it was the party of Lincoln that freed them, and that was a Republican. So, it's all kind of a mixed bag. And of course, when governments change and different policies go into effect, and so I guess things are just kind of stalled down there in Australia then, and so the prime minister down there has got his back up, and maybe it's an economic thing. Maybe they're scared that they're going to have to give some things back, or is it a rights issue, or what is it that the Aboriginals are asking for? They want some land back, or what is it they've been asking for? Just an apology.
Well, they want an apology. They want entitlement to their lands, their sacred lands, especially the sacred site. When you go build it on sacred sites, and you know we know this as well. When you go build it on sacred sites, you're building on Mother's beauty lines. You know, she can't breathe. So this is being brought to the front. There's also issues of human rights, health care. You know, they got problems like we do, internal struggles, and there's drugs and alcohol. And big thing down here with a lot of the younger generation in the Aboriginal community is sniffing gasoline, puffing.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah, that's a big problem here. Suicide, getting beat up by the cops. There's been riots here lately, a couple different places from... Oh, you know, they say that the police were chasing a kid, and he fell onto a fence and impaled himself on a fence, and everybody in the town come unglued, and there were bottle rockets and fire bombs and things thrown at the police. It was a big, you know, big blow-up over that.
Sounds like the kind of stuff that was going on up here in the late 60s and early 70s.
Yeah.
I guess they're about 30 years behind the aim then.
Yeah, they are, actually. Yeah. Everything's behind here. When you guys get the new movies over here, we don't get them until about 6 months later. So. And that's the way with everything.
Well, maybe we need some more Crocodile Dundee to put Aboriginal people in a better light. I know.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Because it is strange. Most Americans, if they haven't been to Australia, that's all they know about Australia is Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah.
And the Australians here know absolutely nothing about the Native Americans other than what they see on television. And, you know, they still show the old Ricardo Montalban Indian movies here.
Oh, you're kidding.
The John Wayne Indian movies. All the old ones that portray the Indians as savages, you know. And you'll see, every once in a while, you'll see a stupid commercial that... is about one of their gambling casinos here, and it'll show an Indian putting his head on the railroad tracks listening for something to come. You know, just stupid commercials that depict the Native American Indian as in the old ways, the old TV Hollywood ways, the savage. Yeah. They really know nothing about us here. And when I first came here, boy, I'll tell you, they rolled out the red carpet for me. And I was really surprised. And people want to know. They do want to know. And I said this to somebody yesterday, you know, religion is, if you look at it as a whole, it is all the same. We all worship, or, you know, we all pray to the same God, or the Great Spirit. Whether they know it or not, it's all the same one. And the only thing that's wrong with it is they put fences up in between all of them and divide it. And that's what the New World Order is all about anyway, is divide and conquer. I forgot where I was going with this, but...
Well, I know, you know, we've interviewed Yellow Horse Man. He was down there with Maki Ruka, I guess, back in the probably 70s and 80s. And Maki, I guess, was a Maori elder, but they traveled worldwide. And Chokosh Aoho, she's a Chumash elder, and she's been down there. And Earth Thunder... another elder that we've done that's been down there, and there's people down there that want to know. There's been a lot of conferences and workshops, and you know, a lot of people wanted to know. And I think it's great, you know, for Aboriginal people. Anything we can learn from them, that's wonderful, because.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a lot of ways, American Native people are forgetting a lot about their culture. I know, basically, the Cherokee culture was over with by 1880, and we're really trying to. There's bits and pieces. It was like a shotgun, you know, bird shot going off, one shot aimed straight towards the zenith, and everything just landed scattered, and. After 100 years, so they try to reconstitute everything, and then by this time, Everybody that's got a little bit here and a little bit there, they figure that they've got it all, and so you got fighting going on all over the place among Cherokees, which is nothing new. But you know, putting the whole, the Ketua prophecy, said that at this time there'd be our blood would be diluted, and we'd be fighting between families, and really is unfortunate, especially with the ones that are federally recognized, putting the ones that aren't down. When the surprising thing is the ones that aren't fairly recognized were the ones that were the most traditional people. And, So, it's all, of course, the ones that are fairly recognized are the ones that get the press, and so it's a real mess. And then you got, the ceremony police. Yeah, there's a lot of that going on here, too. People making noises that, I don't want to cross that line over.
Some of the Blue Otter is quite understandable, because I have seen some non-Indian people out there that are what, I hate that word wannabe, but doggone it, that's what they're trying to do. And
yeah.
They're making Indian crafts and selling them as genuine stuff, and that is cultural theft in my book.
Yeah, it is. It is.
But on the other hand, there's a lot of really true-hearted, as opposed to two-hearted people out there that are genuinely interested in the culture. They want to connect with that spirit, and they have every right to, because we all belong in the same circle. I mean, if we're going to say we're all one, then we better walk the walk as well as talk the talk.
Yeah, well, you can't. I mean, the people, I know what you mean about the wannabe thing, because I used to, I used to resent people that call other people wannabes, but after you, I mean, not everybody knows as much about our culture as you and I do, and after a while you run into people, it's kind of, they say ignorance is you don't know and you don't want to know, and you get a people that discover their Cherokee or whatever, and they'll read a little bit about it, and then all of a sudden they'll put a bone necklace on and grow their hair a little bit long, or take a Cherokee name and mispronounce it.
Give themselves a name.
And these people are good-hearted. They just it's tough to walk up to them though and say, "Hey, you've got a little bit of a clue, but you don't have a clue," and then the big fight comes over. Well, who's going to teach them? And then the competition, the jockeying with to capture their minds, and we have so much of that going on here, especially in this state, because there are so many Cherokees here there was a 1817 reservation just south of here across the Arkansas state line, and after the Trail of Tears, they had begun relocating. Missouri and Arkansas, at the end of the 1700s, and so when the bunch walked the Trail of Tears, and they just took over, and they said, "Well, if you don't send your chief into a certain place at a certain time, you're outlaws." And a lot of them just thumbed their nose at them and said, "Well, hey, we're staying where we're at, and you can do whatever you want to." But people are beginning to wake up to being Cherokee and a lot of other different tribes, but there's just so there's not a lot of information around, and be real frank with you, we've got a lot of personality cults going on here.
Yeah.
People claiming to be chiefs, and misrepresenting the culture, and you put that together with a populace that isn't really well read, and they're already predisposed to kind of be ignorant because they haven't had a lot of schooling, and they don't maybe not read well, and they might have learning disabilities. And I'll tell you, it gets to be a real mess. It gets to be a real mess.
Absolutely.
We've got a lot of we've got a long road ahead of us, and we're just now going around the corner here, and I think. you know, we're not alone. As Cherokees, we're not alone. I think we've got a lot to learn from our brothers down in Mexico and Central America. Mm-hmm. I call those the real Indians, you know. But, you know, a lot of arrogant American Indians will look at them and say, well, they're not Indians, they're Mexicans. Well, you know, for heaven's sake. You know, those are the people that are down there still living tribal ways. And so anyway, everybody's being
rich. What I'm struggling with more than anything is trying to find out what my other blood is. Because I'm not. It's a toss-up between German and Irish, but I'm leaning more toward Irish because of grandfather. My grandfather was personal friends with Pat O'Brien, the actor, years ago. And you know, there was a lot of talk of Irish being in the woodpile back then.
What was his surname?
Pardon me.
You're a Smith, though, right?
Yeah, I'm a Smith. On my stepfather's. See, I was adopted out of 3 months. Old by my stepfather and stepmother and my mother's sister. My grandfather was full blood Cherokee. My mother, I think she was Cherokee and Irish. And my biological father, who I only met like once or twice, his last name was actually Newman, which I think is German, and that's what is so confusing about it. You know, so I. You know, I'm having more of a struggle finding out what the other part of my
family
is. I already know the German part.
From Neumann. That's pretty German.
N-E-U-M-A-N. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that sounds German, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard, especially with adoptions. And your ancestor that was full-blood Cherokee, was he assigned a last name, or he just come through Virginia and... You know, with some of the early English that married in, because there's a lot of Smiths that come down from the marriage between Powhatan and Pocahontas' mother.
Yeah, well, grandfather was his last name was Thomas.
Okay. Yeah, there was Thomas Old Settlers that went into Oklahoma.
Yeah,
it's a pretty common Cherokee name. I interviewed Paul. Paul Thomas was the chief of the Cherokee Elders Society, and so that's not an uncommon name among
them. No, and I found documents in my lineage going back to the 1800s, and a lot of the last names had Eni in them, Walini. Alini, things like that, you know, which are common Cherokee, old Cherokee names.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back when, you know, a lot of them were born and died on the same day or died 3 months later, you know, back when the smallpox and all that stuff was going around. There was a lot of short lifespans back then. And then...
So your family made it to Oklahoma?
Oh, I'm sure they did. In North Carolina as well, you know, they spread out all over the place.
Because I was thinking, there in Texas, a lot of the civil war, a lot of the Cherokees that allied with the Confederacy ended up staying in Texas.
Yeah,
a lot left the country, went to South America.
Yeah.
But
there's also. Big misconception, and it's a myth about, you know, what an Indian looks like. And I think we talked about this before years ago when the first settlers came in. They found blonde-haired, blue-eyed children running around through the camps.
Well, that was
white skin.
That was De Soto, Hernan De Soto, in the expedition of 1540. He, you know, they're the way. Chief Rogers, the chief of the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, he said that the Cherokees have always been like a multicolored rope. We've always had four different colors running through us and always will. And, you know, the ones that got caught up in the Trail of Tears, you know, were the dark ones, because you can look at the pictures of the ones that, and of course, you know, when we came up from Mexico, I think we look different than we are now. And if if you go to CherokeeNationMexico.com, you can see, you know, some of the characteristics that the Cherokee people used to have, like the kind of the ski jump nose, and you know, they still wore turban like or stocking hats back in those days, and these were lighter skinned people that lived right next to the Mayans, and our civilization. Apparently, we moved up here about 1,500 years ago, which coincides with the drought in Yucatan. Our wampum belts are type of Mexican seaweed. So, yeah, we've migrated around, and I think the people that could pass for white did, and because the pressure was so great. But I mean, the stories of so-called white Indians are just. There's just so many of them, but the whole idea of
Aboriginals here.
Yeah. Well, the whole idea of being, you know, what a full blood is has nothing to do with, you know, what your skin color is. It's always been a matter of attitude. And,
yeah. Well, there's a Hollywood Indian, what I call the Hollywood Indian image. A lot of people don't know. You know, all they see is what they see in the TV and the movies.
Yeah. Well, then Cherokees look different from all other Indians anyway. We're taller. We don't have the moon-shaped faces. We look different. So we get razzed a lot.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of WiseFoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfast and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why.
But anciently, you know, if a Cherokee or a Hopi spoke up, everybody shut up and listened because we were known as the Twin Fires.
Yeah.
And but nowadays, you know, I guess we're all like Rodney Dangerfield. We get no respect. You know?
We get no respect.
We get no respect. That's okay.
That's all right.
That's all right.
We're not, yeah.
But, well, this is great. I'm glad I had a chance to talk with you. Got some other friends down there in Australia that met through Red Elk, and I know they're going to be tickled to see you being interviewed. You might, what's the name of that board that you post to pretty often? I can't remember that.
I used to post on Surfing the Apocalypse.
Yeah, for Surfing the Apocalypse. Yeah, yeah, you might.
Yeah, but I haven't posted. Yeah, I haven't posted there since last year. Well, not long after I posted that letter, I said this is my last message on here.
Okay.
I really didn't have time to sit around on the computer a lot. Anyway.
What do you do for a living?
What do I do for a living? Well, while I'm here, I hold workshops and I teach. I teach people about the native ways and everything.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people that are interested in that. And I've been asked to go to schools. I go to out-of-hour school care facilities and do one-hour programs for children They never end up being 1 hour. They always end up being an hour and a half, too, because people don't want me to leave. And I go to teach a lot of the Native Aboriginal children here, too. And I brought all my regalia here with me and everything. I brought all my flutes. I've got about 18 different flutes that I play. And I put on a pretty good show for these people and these kids. And pretty much I'm trying to bridge the gap here between the cultures and show them what Native Americans are like. You know, and I give them a lot of different examples of the different tribes. I see. If you look at the Miamis and the Potawatomis, you know, a lot of them have blonde hair, blue eyes, and white skin, full beards. There's different kinds of Native Indians around all over the place. So we're trying to get, you know, just bridge that cultural gap is what I do. And I don't sell Indian. If I make a medicine bag or a dream catcher or something like that, I give it to somebody. And I don't ever ask for any payment. It's offered to me, and you know, I've got other methods of income as well. So
right. Well, you know, taking donations, and that's always been traditional. Nothing wrong with that.
I don't want to be accused of being a member of the Doe Nation. people want to, and they kind of expect you to take it. You know, I get everything from stones given to me, crystals, different craft items that people have made, and that's all fine and dandy. You know, money's not a big issue with me. I'm not rich, but I get by pretty well.
Of course, you got. How long have you been married? You got a family?
We just celebrated our 4th anniversary.
Oh, any kids yet?
Not on this. And no, I've got a boy, he's 24 over in the state, and I've got a grandson who's 5 now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're older than I am. You're in your mid-50s, so, yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'll be 53 this June. Yeah.
Right. And, now, you mentioned this gal you met with Powell. Is she Australian?
She was born here in Adelaide, yeah.
Oh, okay.
She was born right here, yeah.
So now, Adelaide, you're on... You're on in South Australia. Where's that? No, Adelaide is where.
Yeah, we're down in the little bay area there.
Okay, that's where I thought.
At the bottom of the map, there's a little notch in the land there.
Right. So you're not too far from Dr. Gottrell because he's down there in that province. Okay.
Oh, he's 20 minutes away from my house.
Yeah. That's interesting. And well, you know. You know, my dad always felt constrained by the U.S., and, you know, given the right circumstances, I think he'd have thrown it all over and gone to Australia. That was his big dream, too.
Yeah.
Go do something different. It was still kind of the last frontier, but, you know, there's I get the frontiers are in our minds nowadays, you know.
Yeah.
There's
no better here than there, or no better there than here, I suppose.
Yeah, it really, as long as you're doing something you believe in, and because you know, if you don't, if you're just going through the motions, you know, you got a vocation, and can't do something that you really believe in, you just become an automaton, and you lose your soul, that's why, you know, I love doing this, I get to learn. Well, you know, they say the teacher is always the one that gets to learn the most. So,
yeah, that's true, very true.
Well, we certainly appreciate you calling, and at your cost. Yeah, and,
well, that's not a problem. I love to talk, as you can tell. So,
yeah,
anytime, Blue Water.
That's a lot of fun. I know the folks. And we'll have to get you back on. I think we're going to have to start doing two interviews a week because I figured you know, we might get to that point. And
I've got so much information.
Yeah, you know, I've got a whole bunch of people waiting to be interviewed. I'm going to interview Dr. Luis Mel Madrona. He's an author. He's part Cherokee. I'm going to interview him Sunday, and we're going to, let's see. And then you introduced me to another elder
that's a member of Monotaca, and I got a whole bunch of other people. I think, you know, we might have to start doing, you know, one on Saturday and one on Sunday, and maybe one on Friday. Who knows? The show's growing, and we've now got prophecykeepers.net, which is a cool new discussion board, and you're teaching on that. And we got the foundation up and running, so we can take donations are tax deductible, so it's we're over that hump of the first year, and things are moving on, and I think things will go a bit more swimmingly now. I guess that first year is always real tough for nonprofits. We really wondered, but it's like anything, it's worth doing. It's worth doing well.
I'm going to jump on the bandwagon here, too. I'm going to send you a little something because what I have to do, since I don't do credit cards and personal checks and things like that, is I have to go down to American Express to get the traveler's checks.
Oh!
Everything, $25 in the United States is $50 here.
Yeah.
It's a different currency thing, but it's all the same.
Well, we sure appreciate it. We can use every little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not expected. We'll never turn away a donation.
Well, you shouldn't.
Because
yeah.
I'll tell you, when it comes down to, we're hoping to start doing some mass mailings legally,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know whether that'll work or not. You know, sure couldn't hurt. The last time I looked at it, you know, they wanted. Oh, I don't know what it was. It was, you know, $700 for 1,000 names or something like that. But, you know, like a price of everything on the net, it's all coming down. So, and they have double opt-in lists where people actually want to get mail and certain stuff. So we'll give it a try. We'll get it a spin. What the heck? Got nothing to lose, everything to gain. And because I know there's people out there. I mean, everyone in the world knows about Nostradamus. And the interview that
you
did with John Hogue, you know, we were pretty much, in my mind, you know, we proved that, you know, he saw something. He saw the astrological configuration and the drought and these other things that were going to be going on during that period of time. And, you know, going way back to the beginning of this show, back last year, some of the people might remember that I kept asking everybody if December 26th meant anything to them. Because of some things that happened to me back in 84 and in 85. And I kept asking, you know, what about December 20? And then all of a sudden, you know, the tsunami happened on December 26th. And
people felt that one coming.
Yeah, well, and then I was told that, you know, this year was going to be the year of the Great Havoc 7 years ago, and that's certainly happening. And now I'm really kind of concerned about this thing with Yellowstone, because I think what I need to do is I need to write a new ebook, you know, explaining that the Yellowstone, the way the scientists explain what would happen if Yellowstone did go, that it would fulfill so many far-out prophecies, you know, especially one about red skies and, you know, refugees being on their, you know, walking long distances. I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And
they're worried about the ones in Sumatra, too. There's a big supervolcano.
Yeah, they sure are. And
Aboriginals are warning us here that there's going to be a massive earthquake here in Adelaide.
Mm.
They're warning us now. Scientists are warning us. They've been on television about it.
Interesting.
Yeah, and the Aboriginals say, yeah, it's going to, the epicenter will be in Blackwood. And I'm thinking, oh, good, that's 15 minutes from here.
Well, they had that black rain. Then they had predicted what a black rain situation down there, and that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that happened. I should have brushed up on my Aboriginal. You know, folks. You know, I've got two prophecy encyclopedias, and one for Eastern, one for Western Hemisphere, and the two of them together are 650 pages, and you know, a lot of times I can't remember everything that fit it because we've literally got, you know, from Aboriginal to Zulu, 160 articles from 60 different nations, and I can't remember them all. I guess I need to go back. But I remember that one about Black Rain and some other ones that had been fulfilled. And Yeah, so the Aboriginals, they're plugged into the Mother Earth message system, and they know what's coming down the pike.
Yes.
Well, I sure appreciate your call.
Yeah, your circles.
Yeah, and any last words for the folks?
Gather your circles. Make it one big one. That way we don't have any missing links in the chain. I think we can, it's inevitable that there's major changes coming. We're not going to avoid that because Mother Earth is stretching out, giving birth. And, if we don't go back to the 13-moon calendar, back to Earth time, Mother Earth is going to do it for us sooner or later anyway.
Mm.
I think there'd be a lot less chaos, and who knows, maybe in peace would break out. Yeah, I would just say keep your circles going, but try to get together and use the vibration, the power of love and healing to cushion the blow.
Okay. Well, Watto, for being on the show.
Thank you, Blue Otter.
Okay.
And I will talk to you again.
All righty. And thanks, folks, and we'll see you again next week. All righty. Thanks a lot, Daryl.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Otter. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
But anciently, you know, if a Cherokee or a Hopi spoke up, everybody shut up and listened because we were known as the Twin Fires.
Yeah.
And but nowadays, you know, I guess we're all like Rodney Dangerfield. We get no respect. You know?
We get no respect.
We get no respect. That's okay.
That's all right. That's all right.
That's all right.
We're not. Yeah.
But well, this is great. I'm glad I had a chance to talk with you. Got some other friends down there in Australia that met through Red Elk, and I know they're going to be tickled to see you being interviewed. You might. What's the name of that board that you post to pretty often? I can't remember.
I used to post on Surfing the Apocalypse.
Yeah, for Surfing the Apocalypse. Yeah, yeah. You might.
Yeah, but I haven't posted. Yeah, I haven't posted there since last year. Well, not long after I posted that letter, I said this is my last message on.
Oh, okay.
I really didn't have time to sit around on the computer a lot. Anyway.
What do you do for a living?
What do I do for a living? Well, while I'm here, I hold workshops and I teach people about the native ways and everything.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people that are interested in that, and I've been asked to go to schools. I go to out-of-hour school care facilities and do one-hour programs for children. They never end up being 1 hour. They always end up being an hour and a half, too, because people don't want me to leave. And I go to teach a lot of the Native Aboriginal children here, too. And I brought all my regalia here with me. and everything. I brought all my flutes. I've got about 18 different flutes that I play. And I put on a pretty good show for these people and these kids. And pretty much I'm trying to bridge the gap here between the cultures and show them what Native Americans are like. You know, and I give them a lot of different examples of the different tribes. I see. If you look at the Miamis and the Potawatomis, you know, a lot of them have blonde hair, blue eyes, and white skin, full beards. There's different kinds of Native Indians around all over the place. So we're trying to get, you know, just bridge that cultural gap is what I do. And I don't sell Indian. You know, if I make a medicine bag or a dream catcher or something like that, I give it to somebody. And what I don't ever ask for any payment. It's offered to me, and you know, I've got other methods of income as well. So
right. Well, you know, taking donations, and that's always been traditional. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I don't want to be accused of being a member of the Doe Nation. people want to, and they kind of expect you to take it. You know, I get everything from stones given to me, crystals, different craft items that people have made, and that's all fine and dandy. You know, money's not a big issue with me. I'm not rich, but I get by pretty well.
How long have you been married? You got a family?
We just celebrated our 4th anniversary.
Oh, any kids yet?
Not on this end, no. I've got a boy, he's 24 over in the state, and I've got a grandson who's 5 now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're older than I am. You're in your mid-50s, so, yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'll be 53 this June. Yeah.
Right, and now, you mentioned this gal you met with Powell. Is she Australian?
She was born here in Adelaide, yeah.
Oh, okay.
She was born right here, yeah.
So now, Adelaide, you're in South Australia. Where's that? No. Adelaide is where?
Yeah, we're down in the little bay area there.
Okay, that's where I thought.
At the bottom of the map, there's a little notch in the land there.
Right, so you're not too far from Dr. Guttrell, because he's down there in that province, okay.
Oh, he's 20 minutes away from my house.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. And well, you know, my dad always felt constrained by the U.S., and, you know, given the right circumstances, I think he'd have thrown it all over and gone to Australia. That was his big dream, too.
Yeah.
Go do something different. It was still kind of the last frontier, but you know, the frontiers are in our minds nowadays, you know.
there's no better here than there, or no better there than here, I suppose.
Yeah, it really, as long as you're doing something you believe in, and because you know, if you're just going through the motions, you know, you've got a vocation, and can't do something that you really believe in, you just become an automaton and you lose your soul. That's why, you know, I love doing this. I get to learn. Well, you know, they say the teacher is always the one that gets to learn the most. So,
yeah, that's true. Very true.
Well, we certainly appreciate you calling, and at your cost. Yeah,
no, that's not a problem. I love to talk, as you can tell. So,
yeah.
Anytime, Blue Water.
That's a lot of fun. I know the folks are we'll have to get you back on. I think we're going to have to start doing two interviews a week, because I figured, you know, we might get to that point. And
got so much information.
Yeah, you know, I've got a whole bunch of people waiting to be interviewed. I'm going to interview Dr. Louise Mel Madrona. He's an author. He's part Cherokee. I'm going to interview him Sunday. And we're going to, let's see. And then you introduced me to another elder that's a member of Monataka. And I got a whole bunch of other people. I think, you know, we might have to start doing, you know, a one on Saturday and one on Sunday, and maybe one on Friday. Who knows? The show's growing, and we've now got
prophecykeepers.net, which is a cool new discussion board, and you're teaching on that. And we got the foundation up and running, so we can take donations are tax deductible, and so it's we're over that hump of the first year, and things are moving on, and I think things will go a bit more swimmingly now. I guess that first year is always real tough for nonprofits. We really wondered, and but it's like anything, it's worth doing. It's worth doing well.
I'm going to jump on the bandwagon here, too. I'm going to send you a little something, because what I have to do, since I don't do credit cards and personal checks and things like that, is I have to go down to American Express to get the traveler's checks.
Oh!
Everything, $25 in the United States is $50 here.
Yeah.
It's a different currency thing, but it's all the same.
Well, we sure appreciate it. We can use every little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not expected. We'll never turn away a donation.
Well, you shouldn't. Yeah.
Because I'll tell you, when it comes down to, and we're hoping to start doing some mass mailings legally,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know whether that'll work or not. Sure couldn't hurt. The last time I looked at it, they wanted, I don't know what it was. It was, $700 for 1,000 names or something like that. But, like the price of everything on the net, it's all coming down. So, and they have double opt-in lists where people actually want to get mail and certain stuff. So we'll give it a try. We'll get it a spin. What the heck? Got nothing to lose, everything to gain. And, because I know there's people out there. I mean, everyone in the world knows about Nostradamus. And the interview that
yeah.
we did with John Hogue, we were pretty much, in my mind, we proved that, he saw something. He saw the astrological configuration and the drought and these other things that were going to be going on during that period of time. And, going way back to the beginning of this show, back last year, some of the people might remember that I kept asking everybody if December 26th meant anything to them because of some things that happened to me back in 84 and in 85. And I kept asking, what about December 26th? And then all of a sudden, the tsunami happened on December 26th. And
people felt that one coming.
Yeah, well, and then I was told that, this year was going to be the year of the Great Havoc 7 years ago, and that certainly happened. And now I'm really kind of concerned about this thing with Yellowstone, because I think what I need to do is I need to write a new ebook, explaining that the Yellowstone, the way the scientists explain what would happen if Yellowstone did go, that it would fulfill so many far out prophecies, especially one about red skies and refugees being on their walking long distance. I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And
they're worried about the ones in Sumatra too. There's a big supervolcano.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, they sure are. And
Aboriginals are warning us here that there's going to be a massive earthquake here in Adelaide.
They're
warning us now. Scientists are warning us. They've been on television about it.
Interesting.
Yeah, and the Aboriginals say, yeah, it's going to the epicenter will be in Blackwood. And I'm thinking, oh, good, that's 15 minutes from here.
Well, they had that black rain. Then they had predicted a black rain situation down there, and that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that happened. I should have brushed up on my Aboriginal. Folks. I've got two prophecy encyclopedias, and one for Eastern, and one for Western Hemisphere, and the two of them together are 650 pages, and a lot of times I can't remember everything that's in it because we've literally got from Aboriginal to Zulu, 160 articles from 60 different nations, and I can't remember them all. I guess I need to go back. But I remember that one about black rain and some other ones that had been fulfilled. And so the Aboriginals, they're plugged into the Mother Earth message system, and they know what's coming down the pike.
Yes.
Well, I sure appreciate you calling.
Your circles.
Yeah, and any last words for the folks?
Gather your circles. Make it one big one. That way we don't have any missing links in the chain. I think we can, you know, it's inevitable that there's major changes coming. We're not going to avoid that because Mother Earth is stretching out, giving birth. And, you know, if we don't go back to the 13-moon calendar, back to Earth time, Mother is going to do it for us sooner or later anyway.
Mm.
I think there'd be a lot less chaos, and who knows, maybe in peace would break out. Yeah, I would just say keep your circles going, but try to get together and use the vibration, the power of love and healing to cushion the blow.
Okay. Well, Watto, for being on the show.
Thank you, Blue Otter.
Okay.
And I will talk to you again.
All righty. And thanks, folks. And we'll see you again next week. All righty. Thanks a lot, Daryl.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Otter. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
This is Jasa Sagonige, a 7th grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault.
prophecy keeper. Tell me your great secrets deep inside your heart, keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times. Let the wind blow, let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper. Just one.